If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the day after Christmas, hope you got everything you wanted, but more importantly, everything you needed. And part of that, of course, is spending some time with those you love the most. I can tell you, we had kind of a subdued day here. We had a good day, don't get me wrong. But it's funny how life works out. You know, the spa is open pretty much 365, but we're going to close this weekend to go take some time with our extended family. But we stayed up on Christmas Eve and watched Tombstone, as you should. And then slept late, and she had to run to the spa because we had a couple people from out of town that wanted to float. So we scheduled them, and just as we're preparing to go leave to eat Asian food, also a Christmas tradition, we had some people show up that were supposed to be on the schedule and you weren't, so we ended up taking care of them at a very late lunch, early dinner maybe, and then went to the movies to go with Mia and Ian. So I got a couple of Starkville kids here in town. Of course, Mia back home from Harvard, and so we went and enjoyed a movie together, and then kind of came home and hung out and exchanged gifts, and we'll do some more of that this weekend. You know how it goes. I mean, it's an extended holiday at times, but reality of this is it's behind us now for the most part, but we spend a lot of time talking family here and talking about doing the right things and all that good stuff. But my hope is that you woke up today feeling better about your life than maybe you did a week ago, right? There's just something about just kind of reconnecting with the people that know the real you and having a chance to spend some time together that makes all the difference in the world. So I hope you had a chance to do that. We look forward to doing a little more of that ourselves, but the holidays are great. It's different. We didn't even put up a Christmas tree this year, and part of that is just that we don't have time to do it, but also, you know, we just don't spend a lot of time here at home. I do. I'm here a lot, me and the dogs, but me and the dogs don't need a lot to make us feel special. Maybe we should have put up a tree at the spa, but I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it would just be in the way, but yeah, it didn't mean that we didn't enjoy Christmas. We did. It's just a different dynamic now with not having any kids at home. And so, life moves on. And as I share with you guys too, I didn't understand when I was younger, I did not fully comprehend the capacity that we have within our hearts to love. I didn't. I thought I did, but I did not. There are a lot of people that I love. And there are some people that I'm going to love with all my heart that haven't been born yet. I remember after Annie was born, and we were expecting Audrey. And I remember thinking, you know, how in the world could I ever love a child as much as I love this one, you know? And then Audrey was born, and I found out that my capacity for love was greater than I expected. And then, you know, a couple more came along, and now all of a sudden they're producing more people for me to love too. And you begin to think, how could you ever love anybody more than your child? Well, let your grandchildren come around, and that theory can be tested. But again, hope that you guys are doing well. It is a Friday. It is Maroon Friday. And a week from today, we'll be playing a collegiate football game against Wake Forest. And you know as well as I do, with all the things that go along with the holidays, it'll be here before we know it. This next week will likely fly by. Especially for us, you know, we got a lot of travel in front of us. Go spend some time with the kids. And then I got to get on the road to Charlotte, man. Got to go cover a ball game up there. And so it'll be here before we know it. And I hope that for those of you that are making the trip, no cowbells. And what's interesting about that, I guess I should be used to it by now. You know, I talked to bowl officials. I talked to Mississippi State officials and wrote a column. And then, you know, shortly after it comes out, everybody knew. You know, everybody knew. Nobody had it, but everybody knew. Everybody knew. Oh, yeah, we already knew that. Yeah, did you? Did you? Yeah. Because I can tell you the bowl officials were not eager to put that information out there because of the fact they thought it may hurt ticket sales if you guys couldn't bring your cowbells. But to each their own, right? It's fun being, quote, the source. All right, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company, and I need to grab some before I make that trip to North Carolina. We'll have to be quick about that because a lot of windshield time over the course of the next week. But the thing that I love about coming home sometimes is putting my feet under their table. There are few places that I feel more at home than Bulldog Burger Company because I know what to expect there. I'm going to get a great meal at a great price with exemplary service in a great atmosphere in a great, well-maintained location. And people are excited that I'm there. You know, sometimes you go and you show up at a place and you feel like you're an inconvenience to the employees there. It never feels that way at Bulldog Burger Company. They're always glad to see us. That's one of the reasons that they have done so well for so long and expanded the Bulldog Burger Company empire to three great locations now. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's true. Trust the science. It's in writing, too. It is. They'll make you better looking. In addition to that, find your own favorites. One of my favorites is the Pimentology Add Bacon, though sometimes I got to get the Freshman 15. And some days I just feel like, you know what, I just want the Bulldog, the signature burger of Bulldog Burger Company. Treat yourself to their great restaurant-quality hamburgers. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company. The place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. Okay. Have you seen this news about Kyle Whittingham? You know, recently retired from coaching. And now all of a sudden he is emerging as the central figure in the Michigan coaching search. And as we discussed when all that stuff happened with Sherrone Moore, it's an unfortunate scenario for sure. You know, it's really kind of a story of entitlement, things of that nature, but yeah, a lot of people out there now kind of beating the drum for Kyle Whittingham, who has been a tremendous football coach. I don't know that I had that on my bingo card, right? People were like, hey, you know, well, you know, let's go get Dilley from Arizona State. I think Kenny Dillingham has kind of shown in this crazy recruiting cycle that he is happy there and that he has no plans to leave there. You know, that's home for him. I think his wife's an Arizona State alum. They kind of got things rolling there, too. And if you've ever been out there, you know, it's a cool place. It really is. But, yeah, it's just interesting. You know, Kyle announces the retirement, and then all of a sudden, boom, here we are having this discussion. And, of course, you know, stayed behind, took the job after Urban Meyer left for Florida. But after kind of working through that today, because we thought that the coaching carousel was over, and maybe it would be if they make a hire here, right? If they hire Kyle, then there's not like a backfill effect. But, you know, Kyle's no spring chicken. I mean, all due respect to our listeners, and we love each and every one of you, but he's 66 years of age. And just wondered a little bit, you know, how much does he have left in the tank? There's a reason, obviously, that, you know, he decided to hang him up, and there's no way he could have known this was coming. But, you know, if you're Michigan, you start thinking, you know what, even if he only has 3 years, that gives us a quality coach to kind of reset the culture and puts us in a great position to hire the next guy. So I suspect that's probably part of their thinking. So looking at that this morning, I got to thinking, we haven't really talked about the SEC coaching hires. We really haven't talked about them in depth. So I thought, hey, with no games played this past week, we'll knock that out. And we'll kind of look into our basketball weekend and talk about a few other things. But let's kind of run it back, okay? Let's start with who I think one of the most intriguing hires is John Summerall to Florida. I think that is interesting. Now, you may recall, those of you that were subscribers to Gene's page, John Summerall was in our final three when we hired Jeff Levy. It was Barry Odom, John Summerall, Jeff Levy. Those were the three. And John and I have some mutual friends, and I can tell you that there was some level of optimism that he would get the opportunity. Well, it didn't work out, and he ends up going to Tulane. But if you look over his career, and that was the kind of the talk last year, is that, hey, Sumrall is a Kentucky guy. If and when Kentucky makes a move, Sumrall appears to be the heir apparent. That was widely speculated and kind of accepted to be the reality of the situation. Didn't work out that way. You know, he has a couple of big years at Troy and then heads over to Tulane and took on the back-to-back championship game appearances. I mean, the guy just simply wins football games. Now, I think what you like about it is this is a guy that already has some knowledge of the Southeastern Conference because he played in the league and he's coached in the league. Of course, he was a linebackers coach and co-DC at Lexington for 3 years, right around the COVID time. But man, 43-12 as a head coach. That's an interesting dynamic, of course, and he gets, you know, Tulane to the playoff this year and then heads down to Florida. Now, I think one of the things you worry about a little bit is you've had a couple of hires that maybe hadn't gone the way you want. You know, Jim McElwain, of course, that ended up not going well. Dan Mullen, we still don't know the full details behind that, but Dan won, and Dan's winning at UNLV. Didn't look like world beaters in the bowl game, but then you could get Billy Napier. And I thought Billy would do well there in time, but I thought the job might be a little bit big for him from a recruiting standpoint. And that's the thing that you consider. Florida is traditionally a top 10 level recruiting program. Does John Sumrall have what it takes to beat Georgia head-to-head for a player? Does he have what it takes to beat Florida State and Miami? Now, Florida State's down a little bit and probably looking at a coaching change next year. But that's the thing that I guess it would concern me if I was a Florida fan, is that can we recruit with John Sumrall at the level we need to? Yeah, I remember when Billy Gonzalez and those guys from on Dan Mullen's staff left and, you know, put on those Florida polos and says, you don't know the doors that this logo opens for you. Well, I don't know that Dan recruited exceptionally well when he was there. So I think that's the thing you look at and you're a little bit concerned about, right? Yes, he knows the league. Yes, he has a pedigree of winning. Not a huge sample size, but probably enough where you have some level of confidence that he can run a program. But can he recruit at the level you need him to? All right, then there's the Lane Kiffin hire. And I think it's a great hire by LSU. But one of the things that I think about, and there's no arguing against Lane Kiffin's resume. There's not. The one thing that I would say, like at Ole Miss, and I give them credit for this, they can get unified pretty quick. Like they can mobilize everybody and then kind of get everybody pulling in one direction. There's always a handful of people, you know. But you know, you look at what they've done behind Lane Kiffin, you know, with their collective and what they've done on the financial side, they've given Lane Kiffin what he needs to compete. And, of course, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the you know, in a playoff game this week with Ole Miss. And we'll get to some of that stuff a little bit later. But it's also interesting. Every bit of this is just interesting to me. Here's what happens with LSU, okay? And I've seen this many times over after living, you know, what, 16 years down there. They are not going to be outbid for anybody or anything. Okay, LSU, we talk about being a big boy program. LSU is a big boy program. And, you know, Scott Woodard, obviously, no longer there. But, you know, you look at what Scott Woodard did, it brings in Kim Mulkey, brings in Louisiana product. She wins a national championship. He goes out and he hires Jay Johnson away from Arizona, brings him in here, and guess what? He wins multiple national championships. But the men's basketball stuff hadn't gone quite as well, but, you know, when he went and hired McMahon, that was considered a big hire when he did it. And so Scott, I think in some respects, has been unfairly maligned in this whole blow up of Brian Kelly. When he went out and hired Brian Kelly, there were a lot of people that were like, hey, this, you talk about a big boy move, LSU getting Notre Dame's coach to come. And so I think that there is an expectation now that you got to go make the big splash hire. You can't go hire John Sumrall. You can't go hire an up-and-coming G5 guy. You can't. If you're LSU, you want to be LSU. And so this whole thing, I think in many respects, I think in the end you're going to find out that LSU probably overpaid and overcommitted a little bit. But I think because of the season and the angst among that fan base, they had to go out and win the coaching carousel, at least from a PR standpoint. And they have. And it's been interesting to see it all kind of play out on social media. But there's no knocking what Lane Kiffin did at Ole Miss. And if you can't respect what he's done there, you're just being disingenuous. Of course, year number one, they go 5-5. They don't play A&M, which probably prevented them from having a losing season. Would have been nice to extend that streak. But you look at it now, and the five seasons since then, it's been 10 wins or more in 4 of the 5. So no knocking that, and if you don't think that we've got some work to do to catch Ole Miss, you're kidding yourself. You know, it's obvious. That's not a hot take. Everybody kind of sees it for what it is. But I'm just curious to see, like, with Lane, can he do it in that atmosphere? You would say, well, Steve, he did it at Ole Miss. The thing about that is I think when it's all said and done, I think the Ole Miss people are better soldiers than LSU. Now, that's not to say that they're not rabid, but the Ole Miss people, for the most part, are maybe a little more forgiving. They're not forgiving at LSU. Just ask Brian Kelly. Yeah, they're not. And so what's going to happen the first time that Lane pops off in a press conference in Baton Rouge, and then it's front page of The Advocate? What does that erode some of the belief in him? That's the one thing that I would kind of look at and wonder a little bit about. I like the Alex Golish hire. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com. Auburn. Now, there's several reasons why, and I think this may be a sneaky hire that we look back and say, you know what? That was a really good hire. What you may not know is that John Cohen interviewed him when he was at Mississippi State. Wasn't ready then, but they had a pre-existing relationship because of that. So when John goes and sits down with him, you know, it's not like, hello, I'm John Cohen. They've already had some very in-depth conversation. But Golish, another guy that is consistently won. He is a guy that's got knowledge of the league, and he was the offensive coordinator at Tennessee for a couple years, and then gets the head coaching job at South Florida, and did a good job down there. 23-15, but he's won both of his bowl games, but three consecutive winning seasons at South Florida, including a 9-3 year this year. So they win the bowl game, you know, goodness. You know, be a 10-win season for South Florida for the Bulls. Did you think you'd see that coming? I think what you worry about is there's not a huge track record. And kind of like the issue with Sumrall, can he consistently recruit at the level required to be an upper echelon SEC team? And that's what you want. And I can tell you, I got a million stories I can tell you about, you know, Hugh Freeze. And I don't just mean what happened at Ole Miss. I mean, you know, this is a guy that just kind of hit the switch and said, you know what, I guess I'm done. And, you know, hey, the guy's made his money, right? So, you know, I guess tip of the cap to him in that respect. But I think keeping DJ Durkin is huge at Auburn. Durkin did a great job. Of course, State made a little bit of a run at him and never really kind of got off the ground, but they did. And so if you're goalish, you're a guy that's got an offensive pedigree, and now you've got a defensive coach that's been around now for a little while in this league, but also been at Auburn, knows your personnel. They got some really good young players on that defense. And so I think if you're goalish, you just got to go run your offensive scheme. You got to get things done. And the next thing you know, you're moving up the ranks in the Southeastern Conference. I have no doubt that Auburn is going to be able to be really good on defense next year. Zero doubt about that. Let's talk about this Arkansas hire. Now, what's interesting is from the beginning, it's amazing how this thing probably went to script more than people are willing to admit. The chatter coming out of Fayetteville shortly after the coaching carousel began is that they're going to go G5. They're going to go G5. And I don't know if Hunter Yurcich's going to be there much longer, to be quite honest with you. I really wonder about that. You know, he comes out and basically tells everybody the football program's broke and they hadn't been able to compete in the NIL space. And, you know, it's interesting. But Silverfield, 50-25 at Memphis. And over the course of the last three seasons, they've had two double-digit winning seasons. 10-3 in '23, 11-2 in '24. Finishing the top 25, and then 8-4 this year, and they'll play in the Gasparilla Bowl. But Silverfield now bringing kind of a different offense and a different mindset up there. I have the same concerns about him that I do some of the other guys, but the expectations at Arkansas are not what they are at OSU in Florida, and really for that matter, Auburn. I think Silverfield will probably get time. I think it will be a measure of grace. Hey, if they go 7-5 next year, they're going to be thrilled. They go 7-5 at Auburn, they're not going to be thrilled. They're going to be, well, okay, we got better. They go 7-5 at Florida, they're not going to be enthused. But I think because of the fact that Arkansas as a state does not produce a ton of talent, you've got to kind of skew more towards the developmental side. And the fact that he has a lot of relationships in the state of Tennessee, which is a border state, I think Silverfield may end up being a good hire. Do I think it's going to be a great hire and they're going to compete for the SEC championship? I don't think that's the case. I do think they can consistently be a 7-5, 8-4 quality team. And I think at Arkansas, they're willing to take that. I do. They'd love to be a 10-win team. And maybe you get that every 5 years, you feel like you've done well. I don't think Silverfield is a guy, though, that is going to have a bunch of clunker seasons. I don't. I think his offensive concepts kind of lends itself to their recruiting footprint, and I think it'll be okay. I don't think it'll be great. All right, then you've got, you know, Stein at Kentucky. I think this is an interesting hire. I don't know a ton about the guy. And so it's clear when they got rid of Stoops, they already had a plan. And some people are like, hey, this is going to be great. If you don't know his background, he is a guy that's from Kentucky. So that helps. But he's 36 years of age. And nothing against you guys in your 30s. But there's not a lot of pedigree to work with here. He played at Louisville, was the starting quarterback there, was a GA, stayed on as a QC guy, then went to Texas for a couple years as a QC guy, was in high school football for a while, then was at UTSA for three seasons. The last year he was the co-offensive coordinator. And then he's been at Oregon since. So you love what he's done, you know, at Oregon. But this is a first-time head coach. And I think this is one of the things you look at, too. And it says, I think, a lot about Kentucky's commitment to football. You know, there's not a lot of teams in this league going out getting first-time head coaches. You know, we've done that, right? We've done that two times in a row. And that's been one of those things that we've had to kind of learn as we go. When you look at this Kentucky thing, it's just an interesting dynamic to me that you'd write that big check and then go hire Will Stein. Nothing against him, but I think that's probably not the way I would have done it. You write the big check, you're done with him, and I think you've got to make as big a splash as you can make. I don't think they did that, so we'll see. And the thing that we know about first-year head coaches, it's difficult for them to put a staff together that can work with any type of cohesion. It just takes a little while. Do you have time? Maybe at Kentucky they're cool with that. You know, they gave Stoops plenty of time to kind of get going too. Never really, I think, hit what many people hoped he would. But first-year head coaches, it's a little different dynamic, especially when you're asking people to move across the country. Which brings us to Pete Golding. You know, his situation, I think, is different than Will Stein's, right? Because he's staying where he is. You're promoting from within. So there's a working relationship with a lot of people. But that understood, he's still a first-year head coach. And that's something you begin to kind of work through as well. And I think where he has the benefit of maybe over Will Stein is that everybody there kind of knows what's expected. Like, he's brought in some guys, but some of those guys obviously have some experience at Ole Miss. But it's you don't need to tell everybody where the meeting room is. You don't have, you know, everybody knows where to shop, right? And so I think there is a level of continuity in some respects that gives Pete Golding a step up over the Stein thing. Now, Stein may completely surprise me, but the thing that I go back to, and you see it all the time, defensive coaches, by and large, are going to be more conservative. And what I mean by that is they don't ever want to put their defense in a bad spot. Offensive coaches at times can be a little bit over-aggressive because they're optimistic by nature. We're going to go make the play, and sometimes you put your defense in a bad spot. I do think Ole Miss will take a step back. I think we all do, and that's fair. I mean, not to mention, you know, what Lane Kiffin has done. It's historic at Ole Miss. But Golding, obviously, is a guy that's got a lot of ties to the state. Of course, he's from Hammond, Louisiana. Played safety at Delta State in the early 2000s. Stayed on as a GA, and then he went to Tusculum and then back to Delta State. He was at Southeastern as a DC. Southern Miss as a DB's coach for a couple of years. Was a defensive coordinator and corners coach at Texas San Antonio under Frank Wilson, who has now brought him back. Then he was at Alabama for a few years, and depending on who you believe, and Nick Saban was ready for him to go, or whoever, you know. I mean, whoever was involved in the decision-making process at Alabama was ready for him to go. But he goes to Ole Miss, does a good job. There were a couple years who were better than others but on defense, but they found a way to win. And guys, when you're scoring at that proficiency, it's, you know, you don't have to play a ton of defense. And that's the thing, too. I think when you look at Ole Miss, the thing that you probably worry about a little bit, I don't think you worry about the recruiting piece that much because I think the infrastructure is there to still recruit at a fairly high level, especially in the portal. But putting together an offensive staff, that's the real question here. Like we talked about, you know, when we hired Jeff Lebby, the most important hire an offensive-minded coach makes is their defensive coordinator. The same is true in reverse. When you defensive-minded coaches, the guy go out and hire a great offensive-minded coach. And I don't know that they've done that. That's the thing. If I was Ole Miss, I'd be concerned about. Yes, we'll still be able to recruit. Yes, we have some continuity. Yes, probably we'll have some players not hit the portal because of the relationships we've got here. But what's it look like on the offensive side? you know, that's, you know, they go out and get John David Baker from East Carolina, and you know, we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, he's a guy that's got some connections to Ole Miss, but you're asking an awful lot. And, you know, we'll see what that defense looks like next year. You know, obviously, you got Get Perkins coming back, and you can kind of build around that. But, you know, they've kind of managed this thing in many respects almost like a junior college, and I mean that actually more as a compliment, because I think Lane Kiffin kind of figured it out early, and maybe you give, you know, some – credit to the people that run the collective is like you're never really building anything. It's always about next year's team. And that's, I think, the biggest lesson we've learned in the last 5 years is high school recruiting is important. It's not as important as it used to be. It just isn't. You know, I think maybe what I would do is I would just kind of prioritize 15 high school guys and then go get in the portal with everybody else. I would pay whatever I needed to get the top 15 guys I could get in the high school ranks and get them in, get them developed, and get them on the field, and then go out and spend the rest in the portal. And I didn't feel that way years ago. You know, we've got more data to work with now, but there was a time I said, you know what, you can't be so portal reliant. Now, you've had some, you know, some examples out there where you hit on one big portal class and then it snake eyes the next. We've seen some of that. But I think to give Ole Miss some credit, they have managed it probably as well as anybody when it's come to the portal, and they have been very portal reliant. And the numbers speak for themselves. But Pete Golding, I don't think, is going to be able to maintain that level of success. Not to say that he won't win, not to say that he won't do a good job there. But I don't think, you know, without Lane Kiffin, it's going to be exactly the same. And it's so interesting how, you know, the Ole Miss mind works. You know, a month ago, he was the greatest coach, and we needed to keep him. And then now all of a sudden, it's like, man, he didn't do anything. He was just a guy on Twitter. You know, he was just a figurehead. You know, he wasn't responsible for anything. You know, and that's kind of the jilted lover aspect of things, right? It's like, oh, you know, I didn't love him anyway. Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. And you guys had some good times together. But you know, it's interesting, too. We talked about on this show that there was a possibility that half the teams in the league could change coaches. We came up just short of that. We had six of 16. And South Carolina, of course, elects to keep Shane Beamer for another year. And then he goes out and hires Kendall Briles as his offensive coordinator. And then Eli Drinkwitz turns down Penn State to stay at Missouri. So we expected, you know, pretty wild coaching carousel in the SEC, and I think we got it. You know, I think for those of us that love the chaos when we're not involved in the chaos, I think we're very much entertained. I think where Mississippi State fits into this is Jeff Lebby, with some continuity, we've got to be able to make up some lost ground in 26. With so many other people out there kind of installing a system, people getting their staff settled, getting their feet on the ground, kind of getting an understanding of what they have, we have to take advantage of that. We got to win some of those games against some of those teams that are in transition. That's one of the biggest benefits in keeping Jeff is to have some stability. And that's one thing this program needs is stability after what we've been through the last few years. So now we kind of move forward. But, yeah, I saw something, was it like 34% FBS coaching changes this year? Is that right? But so about a third. I mean, is that going to become the norm that every 3 years, just pretty much everybody changes a coach? Could be. Again, I think, you know, changing some things with the calendar would probably give coaches a little more time to work. But, you know, a lot of it is the expectation set by all of us. You know, if you don't win by year three, you're gone. And that's reasonable. I don't think you should get – it shouldn't take 4 or 5 years to build a program when you've got the benefit of the portal. You know, Dan Mullen didn't have the portal when he showed up in 2009. And, you know, I wrote about bowl games, you know, for Christmas for you guys. You know, we went 5-7 in 2009, but we were in nearly every game, right? You go back and look at that, and, you know, this is a team, obviously, that didn't bring a ton of talent back. Had some guys, obviously, from that 08 team that got beat 45-0 in Oxford in Kroom's final game. But, you know, Dan Mullen came in, and Dan was such a great coach. Even at 5-7 and you win the Egg Bowl, and, you know, all of a sudden we feel like we had some juice and some positive trajectory. but we didn't have the benefit of the portal. And then what do you know, in year two, we go out and have one of the best seasons in school history. And so that's one of the reasons people are just simply not going to be patient. It's like, there's been guys before you that were good enough coaches to make it work, and they didn't have the benefit of the NCAA transfer portal. They didn't have rev share and NIL. They didn't have legal compensation. And so now you do. And so, you know, people have obviously changed how they feel about how long it takes to turn things around. It's time for our Close with Blair Player of the Day, brought to you by Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Blair's a closer. Thus the name Close with Blair. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R, just like it sounds. His phone number, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. That goes directly to Blair. Save it in your phone as Mortgage Guy, because you never know when you're going to need some mortgage help. Maybe the dream of home ownership has eluded you, and maybe you weren't quite ready, or maybe you had the wrong loan originator. Blair's been in the industry 25 years. Get his expertise and know-how working for you. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo, which could prove to be more affordable than you think, Blair's the only name to know. A Bulldog through and through, season ticket holder in multiple sports, and also has a place here in town. Let Blair Chandler get to work for you at closewithblair.com. All right, player of the day is going to be Kamario Taylor. As we get into game week, we know how important this game is for the trajectory of our program. Right? We need to go out there and look good. We need to win a game, and we need Kamario to look good doing it. And I think that helps on the recruiting side, but more importantly, I think it helps on the portal recruiting side, because we want to use him as a drawing card. When you got guys out there that are watching him on primetime Friday night on ESPN on national broadcast, it could be a great recruiting tool for us, but also too, to end the season on a right note, send our seniors off on the right foot, and kind of move this thing forward. Everybody knows how important this game is. We're very fortunate to have a bowl game. We didn't earn the bowl game the traditional way, but we're there, and that's all that counts. I went back and watched the Miami of Ohio game against Mississippi State. I remember being traveling on Christmas and getting down there, St. Petersburg, and how great it was. We went, got a few hours sleep, went and covered the game, and then we drove back. And it was a quick trip, but man, it was fun. They won that ball game. It wasn't a pretty ball game at all. Hopefully, hoping for a similar result, but a better performance as we go to Charlotte next week. So again, we're in the game week now, and now it's time for us to kind of move forward. And we will have media availability with Coach Jeff Levy on Sunday morning before church. So many of you are getting out of church. We'll have that content up for you guys, and you'll be able to check that out. So Kamario Player, you're Kamario Taylor, your Close of Blair Player of the Day. Now it's time for today's top 10 list. RRA is brought to you by ColitoGuitars.com. Plenty of guitar today as we feature a well-known guitarist. Kalito Guitars is your Mississippi State guitar shop. They specialize in stringed instruments, but guitars are kind of the bread and butter. They're guitar players themselves. I can tell you, I am absolutely in love with my Steve Vai original. Arm's starting to feel better. I'm starting to play a little bit more and not overdoing it. You know, I'm getting up in age, right? But some days it's fun to just kind of plug in and just play some power chords and just kind of let the stress just kind of just roll off of me. If you are a guitar player, you understand the importance of that. You understand how good it is just to kind of make some racket. And some of you guys are much better than me. You are. Maybe some not quite as good, but we're all improving. And Kalito Guitars is a guitar shop for every skill level. If you're looking to just get into it, if you want a beginner guitar without making a huge investment, they can help you with that. If you just need to upgrade your rig, or maybe perhaps you're ready for something serious, like a Steve Vai or a Joe Satriani signature guitar, you can find those professional grade guitars also available at Kalito Guitars. Now visit the website, KalitoGuitars.com. We're going to give you a promo code that can help you. It's BSR. Stands for Beautiful Steve Roberts, and you know it well. That's going to get you a 10% discount off their already low price. That's going to get you no shipping. That's going to get you no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. That's going to get you a 5% donation to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. Everybody wins, right? You're supporting a Mississippi State-owned and operated business out of Lake Jackson, Texas. You can stop by their expansive showroom and see everything they have to offer and go home with some good gear. You get a quality instrument at a discounted price. And it's not just limited to instruments. Maybe perhaps you need some, you know, some cases or gig bags or cables or accessories. Anything you need to be a better player, you can find at ColitoGuitars.com. And yeah, you can go buy online from a lot of places. But you know what? I want you to feel good about that purchase because you're going to get incredible service. You're going to get great selection. And you're also helping a bulldog. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Kalito Guitars. Check them out today at ColitoGuitars.com. All right. Top 10 list. This rolled across a reel today. I had something else planned. And I said, you know what? We're going to do this. I'm a huge Brian Head Welch fan. To look at me, you probably know that. Love Korn. Love Brian Head Welch. Love his story. You know, he's a guy that was caught in the throes of addiction and wrapped up in a life of sin and left Korn for a while and you know, found a relationship with Jesus Christ. He's very vocal about that. He's very open about his faith and still rocks like never before. Went back to Korn and actually became a bit of a missionary of sorts within the band and helped everybody kind of get their lives together. But, yeah, there's a couple of Korn albums out there that don't have Head on them. And to be honest with you, I don't like them as much. I just don't. But in the hiatus, Brian Head Welch put together another band because he is a creative, a band called Love and Death. And there's a lot of religious overtones to some of this music, but it's written in more of a secular way. And then they had a second album that came out called Perfectly Preserved, which is the better album. And there's some songs from the first album that made its way over to the second album. So we're going to take some time to celebrate Brian Head Welch and Love and Death today. That's the plan. And I think you will probably appreciate this. As you begin to kind of get to know this band better, as I have to, sometimes Apple Music just irritates me. You know what I mean? Sometimes, like, I know exactly what I want to do, and they disagree with me. But again, just a couple of albums and a great live album as well. Between Here and Lost is the debut album. So we're going to start with, and we'll go quickly, okay? 10 on your list is White Flag. That's the last track on the Perfectly Preserved album. It features Ryan Hayes, and I think you're going to enjoy the vocals on this. And that's the thing, you know, Head does some vocal stuff, and JR does some vocal stuff, and they have some guest vocals from time to time. This is one that I think you'll really enjoy. Sticking with that album, number 9, also featuring Keith Wallen. It's a track called The Hunter. And if you like Korn and you like that weird guitar sound, I say weird. I love it, right? It's just so different and unique. Some of it's because they play those 7 strings. This is one you're really going to enjoy. From the debut album, it's a great track. There's a video for this too. It's called Meltdown. And you know, it's in many respects kind of biographical, you know. And so I think you'll enjoy that one. Number 7, it's not the Hinder track or the, what's the name of that band that Dana likes and I don't like? It doesn't matter. But it's, by the way, I think you'll enjoy that one. Number 6, it is the lead track off Between Here and Lost. And it's a great introduction to the band. It's The Abandoning. And again, it's very much in the Korn vein. Number 5, a single that actually was on Perfectly Preserved. It's Lo Lamento. And it's not a flamenco guitar track, I can promise you that. It's very true to the Monkey and Head vein. Number 4, another great one, and there's a video for this one too. You may want to check this out. It's Chemicals. And again, obviously, the title kind of gives away the track there. But you go back to kind of the beginning of all of this. You know, Head was a guy that was really, really struggling with drug addiction. And so he kind of healed by writing about it. And I do some of that too, even 34 years later. Now, number three is a cover. And you know my policy on covers, but this one is so great and is such a great collaboration. I just thought, you know what? We need to honor this one. Now, you may know it, those of you young bucks out there, DJ Snake had a song featuring Justin Bieber called Let Me Love You. Well, Head and Love and Death covered it, and they had Lacey Sturm, the former singer from Flyleaf, on the track too, who's also a very unabashed believer. She's done some great stuff. And even in motherhood and in wifedom, she still does some guest spots some every once in a while, and she's done some solo stuff too. But this is a great, great rendition of this song. If you're unfamiliar with the song, I think you'll enjoy this kind of on its own. But if you are familiar with that DJ Snake track, I think you'll enjoy kind of this rock interpretation of what they put together. Now, number two, this was the debut single from the debut album. And it was huge all over Sirius XM Octane. And if you ever watched Miami Ink, Brian Head Welch was the last person to ever get tattooed on that show. And he got the album cover tattooed on his leg. But Paralyzed is the number two track today. And again, I think it's one. Head does the vocals on it. And I think you will absolutely appreciate it. If you're a Korn fan and you haven't listened to these two Brian Head Welch Love and Death albums, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice. But number one, and I absolutely love it. This thing absolutely rocks. Head does vocals on this, but it's Down. And that's off Perfectly Preserved. It was the lead single off that album. And I think it really just kind of typifies who Brian Head Welch is. I think the lyrical content is very good. I think the rock delivery, the vocals. And listen, Head's not JD, okay? He's not. But does a good job. And again, I think there are some songs out there that he recognizes that maybe you need a few more colors in the palette to work with, so he brings in some other people. But if you don't know the story of Brian Head Welch, I would encourage you to familiarize yourself with it. One of the videos that I watch from time to time when I'm a little bit down, you know, it happens to me, like everybody. I mean, we're all living a shared experience on the same planet. Things are going to go wrong in life. But there's a video that I discovered, man, was it 20 years ago? And you can find it on YouTube. If you are feeling down and depressed, and even if you're not, even if you just need some encouragement in life or you want to know more about Brian Head Welch, it's the I Am Second video with Brian Head Welch. You can Google that on YouTube and go check it out. And it is one of those things that I found later in life and later in recovery. And it has always been an encouragement to me. And I have shared it before on my socials. And I think one of the things about Brian Head Welch that is incredibly important is he really challenges, you know, like what a Christian is supposed to look like, you know. And a lot of people think, well, you shouldn't be out here and, you know, playing rock music and, you know, the devil's tunes and things like that. That's not at all who he is. And I think if you watch that video, you will see the authenticity in Brian and what he does. I had some friends of mine, former tattoo artists of mine, and a buddy of his that went to see Korn. And they snuck backstage, and they looked like they were supposed to be backstage, as do I. So it kind of makes it easy when you go see people play in smaller venues. You can kind of go in as you please if you look the part. But anyway, Froggy and his buddy wanted to go meet Korn. That's his favorite band. And they sneak backstage, you get a picture. Head thought it was so rock and roll that they got back there. And before they got ready to go, Head said, "Hey guys, I want to pray with you before you go." And he put his hand on both of their shoulders and he prayed with them. And there are a lot of people out there that I, you know, it's not my place, but there are a lot of people out there that, you know, I kind of question their motivation. I don't with Brian Head Welch. I don't. And I think when you watch that video, you will feel exactly the way that I do. And he recently played in Byram back in the spring, and I was unable to go. We had baseball to cover, and some would say, "Steve, it's okay if you miss a baseball game to go to something like that." And I probably would have been okay. But I've always wanted to meet Head, and, you know, we've got some mutual acquaintances, I guess we could say. I don't know enough people close to him. But what is interesting is when Dan and I were in Rocklahoma a few years ago, thanks, Mark, Korn was played. And, of course, the drunker everybody got, the more they thought I was Jonathan Davis. And this guy comes up to me, and he goes, "Hey, man, I got to take your picture." I said, "Dude, I'm not who you think I am." He goes, "No, I went to high school with Monkey and Head. I want to send you the guy's picture. I want the guys to see your picture." And so he sends a picture of me to the Korn group text. And he goes, "Hey, JD, if you're not feeling good today, I think I've got your replacement." Nobody would ever know. And Jonathan Davis himself came back and said, "Yeah, that's pretty crazy." And so, anyway, I take it as a compliment, but I love Korn. And but Brian Head Welch is clearly my favorite guy in Korn. I think they're all very talented musicians, and they have a lot going for them. And I think for a younger generation that kind of grew up on Korn, to kind of see them, you know, get off the drugs and do some things that are, you know, more beneficial with their lives rather than just live the rock star lifestyle, I think is an important message for young people to have. And I think when you go back and you look at the pathology of the Korn band itself, you know, and Head talks about that, like the song Adidas and, you know, "All Day I Dream About Sex," you know, and said he heard his daughter singing that song when she's a little kid. And he goes, "Man, this is the message I'm putting out in the world." So he has calibrated things a little bit differently and now has a different message. And so I would encourage you to go check that out, even if you're not interested in the music. If you just need some positivity or perhaps some encouragement and need maybe a good comeback story, the I Am Second Brian Head Welch video is for you. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up my friend, Roy Samanti on X, who's going to be in Charlotte. He still owes us a few uploads, but you can find him on Spotify and X as Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And you can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. You know, there may be something on your Christmas list that you didn't get that you're going to have to buy for yourself. And you know what? That's okay. It's okay. That's what life's about. Sometimes if it's got to be done right, it's got to be done by you, right? So visit Campus Bookmart next time you're in Starkville and go by and see their smiling faces and peruse their wonderful selections of Mississippi State merch. Whether it be apparel or gift ideas or everything you need to detail out your fan cave, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. If you can't make it to town and perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. By being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. That's Campus Bookmart, your one-stop shop for all your Mississippi State merchandising needs. Be sure and check them out today. All right, we got a couple of football games coming up this weekend. And then it gets really interesting next week. We'll do a little bit of a tease about that. But so Saturday, both games in the evening, right? And I think we got a couple of interesting ones here. Virginia and Missouri. Now, I don't know what your feeling is about Missouri, but I tell you this, if they're healthy, they got some good things happening. They're favored by 4 points. We're talking about the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl in Everbank Stadium, Jacksonville, Florida. We've been there 3 times. We have been. Virginia, an interesting team, went 10-3 this year. Lose the ACC title game. But when you begin to kind of break this thing down, I just think Ahmad Hardy is just too much. I think Hardy and that Missouri running game, provided they can take care of the football, I think Missouri is in a good position here. The over-under in this thing is 44.5. So probably expecting a game in the 20s. I think Missouri has a lot of juice right now. You got Eli signing the extension. There is the euphoria of all of that. You can get tickets as low as $28 if you're interested in going. That's going to be a 6:30 p.m. broadcast on ABC. Virginia, a good team, and Missouri, a good team. I just think that the SEC strength and conditioning program is going to be the difference in this. Hardy is a special back, as you guys are well aware. We know from experience. And, you know, again, we had him in camp and didn't run exceptionally well. And the next thing you know, he kind of makes himself as a senior, goes to Louisiana Monroe and has a huge year. And then was one of the top running backs in the portal last year. Now, we got Fluff. You know, wasn't going to be able to get them both. So it's not like that, you know, we missed out completely. But Ahmad Hardy, a Mississippi product, doing some big things at the University of Missouri. And I understand that, like, he was in a two-year deal up there, too. So it'll be interesting. They backload that second year to give you some incentive to stay. So we'll take Missouri and the points against Virginia. I do root for the SEC teams for the most part. You know, once we get into these bowl games, especially teams that we're not recruiting against very often. All right, LSU and Houston in the Kenders Texas Bowl. Believe it or not, the Cougs favor by a point and a half in this game. I think a lot of it's got to do with LSU's offensive struggles. I mean, it's just as simple as it can be. LSU, not a great offensive team this year. This game we played at Energy Stadium in Houston, Texas, home of the Houston Texans. You can get tickets as low as $33 if you're interested in going. I kind of like Houston in this game. They're 9-3 this year, and LSU has some elite defenders. But, man, it's been kind of chaos in Baton Rouge. It has been. And looking back at Houston, too, they get off to a 4-0 start. That included wins over Colorado and Oregon State, and everybody beat Oregon State. They lose to Texas Tech, who was one of the best stories in college football this year, 35-11. They beat Oklahoma State, beat Arizona State. That's a big win. They lose to West Virginia by 10. They beat Central Florida, lose to TCU, and then they beat Baylor. So they're right there in the thick of everything. And then when you look at LSU, it's just so crazy to look at like the scoring over the totality of the season. And Connor Wegman, of course, former A&M quarterback, is the quarterback at Houston. So he'll be ready to go. But like when LSU beat Clemson early in the year, we were like, man, what a big win that is. And then both of them ended up being very mediocre teams. They win that game 17-10. They beat Louisiana Tech 23-7. I mean, it's Tech, right? I mean, let's just be honest. That game should have been a blowout. They struggled a little bit against Florida, but they win 20-10. They blow out Southeastern, but everybody should. It's an FCS team. They lose to Ole Miss 24-19. They struggle against South Carolina, but win 20-10. They lose at Vandy 31-24. They get blown out by Texas A&M. They fire Brian Kelly. They put up 9 points against Alabama, and it's not a great Alabama team. They struggle but beat Arkansas 23-22, and then they nip Western Kentucky 13-10 and then get beat by Oklahoma 17-13. So offensively, in the second half of this year, really since Brian Kelly's been gone, they have really struggled to score points. And I think that is going to be the case in the bowl game. I'm not exactly sure what the LSU roster looks like right now. But I tell you, LSU in an average year is still pretty good. They've won 6 of 7 bowl games. And, you know, they lost that Texas Bowl after they fired Ed Orgeron, and they had the interim coach and had a bunch of players opting out. And it wasn't a great year. They went 6-6, and they win that game late. And Orgeron is, like, celebrated. And I love listening to Ed. That Bustin' with the Boys podcast with him is hilarious. But, you know, they've been really good in postseason. And it's so interesting to look at Brian Kelly. His first 2 years, he wins 10 games. 10-4, 10-3. And then they fire him this year. Probably one of the more surprising firings of the year. But that's what happened. But I think we're going to take Houston. I think Houston is probably more excited to play LSU in their home city than LSU is to go play them. Mike Leach used to always talk about be the most excited to play. I suspect Houston will be the most excited to play. Now, Tuesday, you know, we got NFL football Sunday and Monday. Tuesday, we'll have Tennessee and Illinois in the Music City Bowl. So we'll get some college football to watch then. Tennessee, a slight favorite in that game. Iowa and Vanderbilt will play in the ReliaQuest Bowl down in Tampa. You know, we know what that's about. Been there a couple times. That's going to be an interesting game, too. It's the end of the Diego Pavia era. He's already come out and said that he's not returning next year, even if he gets the extra year, which makes this whole lawsuit thing kind of silly. But he got the year this year. Michigan and Texas, man, in the Citrus Bowl. That's going to be Wednesday, New Year's Eve. That's going to be an interesting game. And again, I think everything that's happened at Michigan, those kids are probably ready to get on the field. But you quietly, things in Texas just kind of been going on. Texas a chance for a 10-win season. They didn't make the playoff, but still something to play for. Then we get into New Year's Day, and how fun is that going to be? We'll talk more about these games as we get closer. But Alabama and Indiana, and I know many of you hate Alabama and you love an underdog story, but tell the truth. Aren't you kind of rooting for Alabama to beat Indiana? There is, of course, Ole Miss and Georgia, one of the hottest tickets in town. It's going to be in the Sugar Bowl. And then, of course, we get ready to play Wake Forest on January 2nd. And so we'll close out the actual bowl games with us. And but, you know, of course, some SEC teams will play on into the playoff. But, yeah, important football this time of year, as you guys are well aware. So, you know, we'll see how things progress. But, yeah, there's some entertaining games, I think. I think the playoff has been an interesting thing. And I talked to a couple people after our last show, you know, about, hey, that eight-game redshirt thing. That basically is 5-for-5. How many freshmen do you know that are going to play in more than 8 games than freshmen? Not very many, right? Because if you're going to do that, just go ahead and do the 5-for-5, right? I mean, it's just kind of the same thing, you know. But the thing that's interesting to me, after a conversation with somebody kind of close to all of this, is this is where the SEC kind of gets beat up a little bit, right? Because everybody would love to have an SEC player on their roster. Like whether you're a G5 team or a Big Ten team or Big 12, you go get a guy that's got multiple years of SEC experience, even if he's not a major contributor, they're going to drive the market up. And everybody keeps talking about there's going to be a market correction. I don't know. You know, I think honestly, and I've said this from the beginning, the very early conversations about NIL. I mean, we're going to have a collective bargaining agreement, a union. I think that's the only way this thing is going to work because there's no protection for anybody. And honestly, I think all these NIL deals ought to be made public. That's my feeling. Now, that's not the way it's set up right now, but I think maybe it should be. I mean, you know, we see terms of NFL contracts and coaches' contracts and all that stuff that comes out. You know, now these players, for the most part, are being paid for with public funds. And in some respects, state funds. There's a few private schools out there, but I think, hey, everybody's got to sign into this, and I think everything should be made public. Don't you think you have a right to know? I think we do. I think we do. And I think it would stop a lot of these, you know, street agents doubling as real agents, because right now there's really not enough guardrails around all that. And so you've got basically anybody can go be an agent and basically profit and exploit these young people for whatever their financial gain is. And I think everybody should be licensed and be subject to the same rules as everybody else. You know, and you guys know as well as I do, everybody's doing this, right? Everybody has an agent now. So we talk about tampering. And listen, there are some coaches that are calling kids too. But by and large, people are just working through the agents. Well, the agent is effectively your rep, and so everybody's kind of working through this now. We don't have much time to spend for January portaling because of the fact you've got January enrollment. And so everybody is out there kind of getting what advantage they can possibly get because things, when we get into January, we get back. And really, it's going to happen on our drive back. Once we get into January 2nd and that portal opens and there's going to be a million guys that declare for the portal that have not made an early declaration. And there's some guys like that. They're just kind of letting their agent do the talking. There are guys that are playing for bowl and playoff teams that plan to go in the portal. And I had somebody else recommend to me, too. I said, you know, hey, if I was an agent, I'd have all my guys go in the portal because you can benefit every year. Now, there's some guys out there that maybe don't have that kind of juice, right? But if nothing else, you find out what your market value is, or at least you tease it. You know, you have your agent call a few schools and say, hey, if John Q quarterback goes in the portal this year, what are you guys willing to pay? You know, this is what we're expecting. Are you willing to pay that? Well, then all of a sudden, I get that young man a deal to improve his situation, then I can go back to the school he's with and say, hey, we got $500,000 or $600,000-$700,000 committed from this school. If you'll match it, we'll stay. That's happening. That's one of the reasons I think a lot of this stuff should be made more public. It's my feelings. Not to mention the fact that you're helping pay for all of it. And I think that's something, an aspect of this that we don't make enough of a stink about, is that when all this stuff is out there, and listen, we shouldn't make it public unless everybody else does. Don't get me wrong. But I think across the board, it would benefit everybody to have a little more transparency in this process. You never know what people are doing when those records are not made available for public scrutiny. All of that is very important. So bowl games, playoff games, portal opens. And we go back to this LSU thing. Don't you think everybody at LSU now is just kind of ready to get going? Like the bowl game for the players is probably a bigger deal than it is for a lot of the fans. They're just ready to see Lane Kiffin go to work in the portal and see how many players from Ole Miss are going to come to LSU. There's all been this Kawan Lacy sweepstakes type deal. So I think that's really where their interest lies. And I think maybe that impacts the bowl game a little bit too. And I think if you're Mississippi State, you see it completely different. Completely different. And again, what's that Ole Miss coaching staff going to look like when they take the field against George down in the Sugar Bowl? That all kind of remains to be seen too. So a lot of things going on, a lot of interesting conversations being had about kind of the future of college football and kind of what needs to happen to kind of give everybody a little more security. Because you think about, like, everybody says, well, you know, Steve, they're pro athletes now. Well, they are, but they're not dealing with the same restrictions as pro athletes. Because you can walk away from a contract year to year. You know, you go sign a 3-year deal, you know, with the Dallas Cowboys, well, you're expected to work that full 3-year deal. Now, you may, you know, sit out and try to renegotiate, but if you elect not to play, then you get fined. If you elect not to show up for OTAs, you get fined. And in the event that you elect not to play at all, guess what? You don't get to transfer. You don't get to leave the Dallas Cowboys and go play for the Washington Commanders. You're still under contract with that team, whether you play or not. And so there are some protections in pro sports that are not applicable to those in college sports. And that's one of those things that has to be corrected. And I think there are a lot of people in leadership of college football, they're just kind of kicking the can down the road and said it'll all take care of itself. It's not going to take care of itself. You, as the leadership of college athletics, you have to take care of this. And if that means we have to adopt an NFL or MLB model, then that's what we got to do. But what we're doing right now, while it's better than what we were doing 2 years ago, it's still not correct. There's not enough protection for the schools and ultimately for the fan bases. Everything right now is very skewed in the favor of the student athlete. And it's just like, you know, you see these lawsuits out there now where players will sign a deal. Was it Georgia we're dealing with? And you had to deal with Wisconsin and Miami. You sign an NIL contract and it's not enforceable. You sign it, said, I'm not going to go get in the portal, and then you go get in the portal. You know, Ole Miss Baseball dealt with this a couple years ago, and those guys ultimately left to go to Tennessee. So you're signing a contract, but only one side is being held accountable to ensure that the terms of that deal are being met, and that's the school itself. So why am I paying you this money when you can just pick up and leave in the middle of a deal? And I think if you sign a deal for 2, possibly 3 years, and you don't have the ability to transfer out of a contract, which is typically how life works. I'm under contract. I don't know, maybe you guys have a working agreement, but I'm under contract. Like, I can't just pick up and leave tomorrow. I've got a contract. I've signed my name to that. And so in the event that I decide just to leave and not honor the terms of that contract, well, then they would take me to court, especially if I elected to leave for a competitor. So I think we have to make college sports more like life. And it's that there's a lot of people out there that they say, well, you know, you don't believe in a capitalist society. I absolutely do. I absolutely do believe in that. And I believe that everybody should be able to market themselves for whatever they feel like they can get. But I think there has to be protection for both sides, because that's how it is everywhere else in life. Final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We have, and we had a blast. We stayed there last New Year's. We're staying somewhere else. We're traveling this time. But here's the thing. Starkville is a great city. It's a great city on game day. It's a great city every day, right? And so there are going to be times in your life that maybe you think, hey, I don't want to break the bank, but I want to get out of town and go do something fun with family. Consider the Stark Vegas Clubhouse and consider coming to Starkville and enjoying some of your favorite shops and restaurants when maybe it's not quite so busy. It's open 365 days a year. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Yeah, right off 182. Very easy to get to. A lot of peace and quiet out there. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will pop up for you. You can peruse the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area. Plenty of parking. Plenty. And that's a real challenge when you're getting a group together. It's where's everybody going to park? No worries at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse. So there's plenty of parking. Had to accommodate a lot of golf swingers years ago. They can certainly accommodate you and your family and friends. Now, when you Google, some booking options are going to pop up. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO, completely up to you. However, you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website at BSR10. That's your promo code. BSR, the number 10, gets you 10% off your stay. You could pay more, but why? Right? By listening to this show, you're saving money. Stay at the premium place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Be sure and check it out today, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, Mississippi State women's basketball back in action on Sunday, and we're going to spend a little time talking about the ladies, give them their due. As you guys are well aware, 12-1 right now. 12-1, 9-0 at home, 1-1 in true road games, thanks to that victory over LaSalle, 2-0 on a neutral floor. They'll host Samford this Sunday. To wrap up the non-conference schedule, it's a 2 p.m. tip. If you're in town, we'd love for you to come. Now, I don't know if you guys keep up with Samford. Let's do a quick kind of overview of Samford. 6-9 in the regular season. They are 2-7 in road games. I mean, they have spent a lot of time away from the Pete Hanna Center there in Birmingham. Man, they have played a total of 11 games away from their place. Only four home games. I guess it's what you got to do. But they had their education day way back on November 3rd. They beat Montevello 75-53. One of their six wins. And then they go to Nebraska. They get beat 80-46. They go to Florida, lose 87-40. They get Florida A&M, you know, kind of while they're down there. And beat them by 20. They lose to Alabama by nearly 40, 84-45. They get Stillman 90-35. They play Central Arkansas at the Georgia State little tournament they had up there. Three games in 3 days. They won two of they lost two of three. They lose to Central Arkansas by 23. They nearly get the host school Georgia State, but lose 69-64. They do get Stony Brook 58-48. And then the never-ending road trip continues. They go to Minnesota, get crushed by 37. They go to Tennessee Tech and Cookeville and get beat by 22. They lose in overtime at home. Their one home loss to North Alabama by 2 in overtime. They go to USC upstate. They grab a dub up there. Thanks, Snow Sullivan. Lipscomb, they get those guys, 65, or those ladies, 65-59, and then lose to UAB December 22nd. That's back on Monday, 65-49. So it hasn't been a great season, and maybe they'll be better in their league for all of this adversity in non-conference as they have kind of traveled around and played some Power 4 teams. But as you guys know, they have not played exceptionally well. Averaging 59.5 points a game, giving up almost 67 a game. Field goal percentage shooting about 38%, shooting right at 31% from beyond the arc. Rebounding, not necessarily been a strong suit for them. They're getting out-rebounded by about 7 a game. I don't know how many teams they played with a lineup as athletic as ours. You would assume Florida and Alabama would be. But handed out about 11 assists a game, giving up 13. They've turned it over almost 16 times a game and only forcing about 14. So, like, a lot of these numbers, again, we go through these stats all the time. The devil's in the details. Like, nobody plays well and inconsistently loses. There's a reason teams that are losing ball games, and it's pretty evident this is a team that struggles at times to play defense and struggles to put the ball in the basket. Kaylee Yarborough is the leading scorer, and she actually spends much of her time coming off the bench. She's played in 13 games this year and started just one. But again, 13 points. You know, some players are just better at that. Some people don't need the anxiety of starting. They need to come off the bench. But she has made 59 field goals this year, 27 of 73 beyond the arc, about 37%, and has proven to be a decent free throw shooter at 74%. But turn it over a good bit, too. That may be one of the reasons she doesn't play more. Brianna Rivera, 11.7, the only other double-digit scorer on the team, pulling down about two boards a game, too. Also turning it over more times than she's dishing out the assist. And Sierra Godbolt leads the team with 35 assists, but also 30 turnovers, second on the team with 35, and 30 turnovers. Jada Knight, similar situation, 37 assists, 27 turnovers. So this is a team that struggles at times with ball security. And kind of looking at the, you know, everybody shoots a little bit, right? Everybody looks to shoot a little bit. But Brianna Rivera, 146 three-point attempts on the year. She's made 52 of them. But you shut her down, you kind of shut them down. It's just kind of how it is. I mean, they got 437 attempts as a team, and she's got 146 of them. So when she gets it, that's number 11, expect her to send it skyward. And again, that's one of the reasons that she is, you know, among the leaders on the team. She started off 15 games. So should be a game that we take care of. You know, we spend so much time talking about opponents. We don't always look and see who's kind of doing well for us. So we're going to spend a little time doing that here. Then we'll have a couple things to talk about before we get out the door. But, yeah, the ladies, again, if I told you beginning of this year, hey, they'd be 13-1, you would have taken it. And you would have probably been surprised. Right? Because we just didn't know what to expect. You know, look at that non-conference schedule and you're like, well, you know, yeah, we should have a good record. But did you expect this? I suspect not. Favor Nurazi started all 12 games for us, 13.5 points, pulling down 10 boards. Man, so it's a double-double every game, got 14 blocks this year. She, a five, has more assists than turnovers. Isn't that interesting, right? Madison Francis, great newcomer, has started 8 games, played in all 12. Second leading scorer, just over 13 points a game, and she's pulling down almost 7 rebounds a game. She leads the team with 40 blocks. Love active defenders. Destin McFall, we knew what to expect from her. 12.1 points a game for her and has been pretty prolific from beyond the arc, shooting about 39%, 19 of 49. You know, second most three-point made baskets on the squad. Chandler Prater has done a good job for us. Has been a regular starter as well. 10.5 points a game and also pulling down about 7 boards. And so, your Bulldog starters, very consistent. You're one player away from having 5 double-digit scorers, and Jalila Lampley coming off the bench is getting 9.2 points a game. So very balanced scoring from this team, and I don't know that we expected that. But everybody's getting on the glass, and that's one of the things that you love, right? I mean, you think about the players that are playing the lion's share of the minutes. They got to get on the glass, and we have. We've done a really good job in that respect. Madison Francis was interesting, too. Nearly half of her boards are on the offensive end. Offensive rebounding is every bit hustle and heart, and that says a lot about the future, you know, with her. But, you know, Lampley's another one like that, too. Not nearly the numbers aren't quite the same, but 25 of her 62 boards are on the offensive end. And, you know, hey, we're getting things done. But I think, again, you can feel good about this team. And, again, next weekend we'll open up SEC play, as you guys are quite familiar with. And, you know, we'll see what happens. And I think there's a lot of people now that have kind of come around to thinking, you know what, maybe it's okay for me to believe in this team. You know, maybe. Maybe it is. I understand the threshold and level of competition in non-conference play has not necessarily been stellar. You know, we should have put together a double-digit, record at this point. But I think we're ahead of schedule. That's my feeling. Maybe you see it differently. Kind of looking at the women's basketball standings, just kind of looking around the league, because I know many of you, you don't even pay attention to it until it's time, right? Women's basketball, and there are a lot of teams in the league that are doing exceptionally well at this point. We'll run it back for you. Alabama, Texas, Georgia, LSU, Vanderbilt, all undefeated in non-conference play. Alabama 14-0, along with Texas, Georgia, LSU 13-0, and then Vandy there at 12-0. So they have not tasted defeat yet. Kentucky and Mississippi State both 12-1, along with Oklahoma, South Carolina. Ole Miss 12-2, Arkansas 11-3, Florida's 11-3, Missouri 11-3, Texas A&M just 7-2. Not sure what's happening there. Auburn 10-3, and then Tennessee 8-3. You know, again, I'm sure they have played a little more challenging non-conference schedule, but everybody doing pretty well. And the things that we've learned about women's basketball, there's probably not a greater variance between the haves and the have-nots than in women's basketball. I mean, you see it all the time. There's some women's teams that just beat each other unmercifully. So based on what we know through the non-conference, you feel like State playing at home against an Auburn team with a first-year coach, kind of implementing their own system, that should be a great game for us. And that's New Year's Day, Thursday, 6:30 p.m. We need you to be here for that. Of course, the men back in action on Monday. So we will preview that game on Monday's show. And again, you know, we're going to have to earn it in conference play, as you guys know. But if anybody is up for that challenge, it's been Chris Jans. And, of course, the Bulldogs have won 3 in a row. So we feel like maybe, again, we felt like maybe that win at Utah, that tremendous comeback, would be a turning point for us. Maybe it has been. We haven't won by large margins, but we have won the last 3. And on Monday, of course, we'll take on Alabama State. Should be a game that we should be able to handle and get into SEC play on a 4-game winning streak and an 8-5 record. And so, again, we have lost some games. You know, we've lost some games that we shouldn't have. And maybe we haven't won a lot that we shouldn't have. But the reality of this is that we got to keep moving forward and see what Chris Jans and the crew can cook up. All right, only a few days left in 2025. I hope that you have made it what you plan to. Hopefully we get another full year. You never know what life's going to bring you. You know, I hope that it was a year filled with more joy than tribulation. It kind of is what you make it. You know, life does happen to us. There are some things that happen that are beyond our control, but the reality of it is that we are the pilots rather than the passenger of our lives more times than not. And you've heard me talk before. Had a life coach tell me years ago I was leading an accidental life. I hope that you are having a purpose-filled life. And certainly, if you're not, you can turn that around in 2026. A lot of people always talk about, you know, new year, new me. And really not much changes. And as we've learned, you kind of get out of it what you put into it. And the only lesson that I can share with you that, about that sort of stuff that has been proven in my life is the fact that if you work exceptionally hard, God will bless your labor. There's some truth in that. And if you don't work, you know, the good book even tells us, a man shall not work, neither shall he eat. And so we work exceptionally hard. We take it very personally. And that's not just, you know, the coverage of Mississippi State, but in everything we do. You know, we work hard in what we do. And I think that's one of those things that separates me and you from other people. Mm-hmm. Is to value work. And it's one of those things my dad years and years ago used to always talk about is, you know, you can only work your way out of it. And that's what you have to do. You have to consistently work your way out of it. You can't just wait for somebody to come save you. There is no search party being formed to come save you. You got to do your part. You got to walk yourself out of the woods. And that requires effort. It's not going to be easy. Sometimes it's going to be very difficult. And many of you, of course, you know, you have to deal with some personal things from time to time, and they negatively impact your professional performance. And so, and vice versa, we got to have balance in life. And that's one of the reasons that we're unplugging this weekend. And I worked exceptionally hard this week because I wanted my guys to have Christmas Eve and Christmas Day off with their families. It's important to me. And I didn't want anybody worried about content production. So I told them pretty early in the week, here's what I'm going to do for Christmas. I don't want you guys to have to do anything. Certainly on Christmas Day, Dan and I are empty nesters. And of course, you know, we had work to do at spa and things like that. We had a good day. But I share that with you because of the fact that I ask a lot of those guys. And I am very appreciative for all of them and their contributions to what we do and what they do for you. You know, one of the things that I mention to people all the time is we can't be the disgruntled fan. We can't be. We've got a bigger obligation than that. You know, like if we get beat in a football game that I expected us to win, we can't just not produce content. You know, we've got an obligation to all of you. And not to mention that, you know, to Mississippi State, to our players, our coaches, and to ourselves. You know, it's not just about how we view the job. It's how we view ourselves. How do you want to be viewed? You know, by outsiders. You know, and my dad told me years ago, if you're the only person that thinks you're the greatest, you haven't accomplished anything. Mm-hmm. And of course, the other side of that is you got a lot of people that gas you up, even when you're doing a mediocre job. There's some truth in that too. And that those people, in many respects, while well-intended, are really kind of an impediment to greatness. You got to take it all, right? You got to take it all. And you decide what you need, and then you kind of discard what you don't. But all feedback is good feedback, even if it doesn't necessarily align with what you think. And there's some people's opinions aren't really worth noting, but you still pay a little bit of attention to it, and you can decide if you want to believe it or not. But when I think about 2026, you know, we've got a lot of things in front of us. Personally, professionally, there's a lot of things that are coming, some decisions we'll have to make. And I suspect that's probably the case for you too. But always remember what matters most, and that's family. You know, you have to do what's best for you and your family. Because at the end of the day, none of us are guaranteed that bedside vigil where we can look around a room and tell everybody how much we love them. You know, I read a story earlier today. Man, it's heartbreaking. That a man from Richland was like crossing a bridge and was struck by a vehicle and thrown off the bridge, and he succumbed to his injuries. And it's like, well, yeah, that's a tough way to die any day. But man, right here at Christmas, it just kind of marks the holiday for all the people that love him. And so our thoughts and prayers go out to those folks. But it's important to understand that we live every day with purpose and live every day with gratitude in our hearts. And we openly share how we feel about people. And, you know, when you want bad news, it's easy to find, right? And so you got to kind of create your own good news at times and go get some things accomplished. And everything is worth celebrating, but we can't let the celebration distract us from what's next. But, you know, when I think about so many things in my life, I don't want to belabor this for very long. I remember Dana and I's very first Christmas, the very first Christmas. And I was as broke as the Ten Commandments, man. I was. But I wanted her to have something special for Christmas. And unbeknownst to me, you know, she was broke too because we're living together. And so I worked. I had to walk to work every day. I worked at a restaurant off West Pine Street there in Hattiesburg. Eventually ended up owning that restaurant. It's crazy how it all worked. It's a story for another day. But next door to our apartment complex was a pawn shop. And so I basically went in and put a Nintendo on layaway and just paid a little bit as I went, right? I'd make a few extra tips. I'd drop by on my way home. I'd pay on it. And it took me months. But I finally bought her that Nintendo, and I gave it to her on Christmas. And I had been given some money from my family for Christmas in addition to some gifts, and I went and bought The Legend of Zelda. And then I give her that on Christmas. And she had a credit card that was almost maxed out, and she went and bought me a boombox. And we sat around for days, and we played Legend of Zelda together, and we listened to my CDs on that boombox. I had all these CDs and nothing to play it on. And I look back at that Christmas, and I was no happier today than I was back then, right? Because happiness is not about finances. It's not about material things. And, you know, we had a little two-bedroom apartment that we had my friend Jim Winter stayed in the other bedroom. And so we sat around listening to Alice in Chains and drank coffee out of a coffee-made four-cup coffee maker and played Legend of Zelda in our spare time, and we had a blast. We had an absolute blast. And then the next year, the Led Zeppelin box set came out, and they were very difficult to get. And I had a friend that worked at a music store that put one aside for me, and I was able to buy that for her. And she had no clue that she was getting it, none whatsoever. And so I share that because obviously I have been bought her a lot of nicer things over the years, and we have probably had some grander Christmases. But I am no less happy today than I was when we had a house full of kids and, you know, a room full of toys. And I missed that aspect of life, but I've embraced this aspect too. And the thing that I've learned, when you do become an empty nester, you better love your partner, right? You better love your partner, because you're not going to spend a lot of time around a lot of people. And if that person gets on your nerves, it's going to be a difficult existence. You know, man, I started with nothing. I mean nothing. I had to borrow $200 from my mom when I got out of jail to go buy clothes, because the girl that I'd been living with relapsed and got evicted from her apartment and lost most of my clothes. Eventually tracked her down and found out that she was able to save one bag of clothes. And so you guys kind of see the finished product, I guess. But you know, when I first met that blonde-headed girl from Natchez, Mississippi, all I had to offer was my love. That's it. I had nothing else to offer. And I had to go get a job working at Orleans Furniture in the rough mill just to do, you know, just to have something, right? Just to have something. And couldn't get a job most places, you know, because I was a convicted felon. And so rather than let those circumstances, you know, shape me in a negative way, I just kept working. I just kept working. And I knew that if I made myself valuable, I could outwork my past. I could put myself in a scenario where I wasn't judged based on a background report, but based on my efforts. And so I share that with you because I don't know where you are in life, but I can promise you, you know, where you are today can be a starting point to something even greater later. I don't care how old you are or what you put up with or, you know, what your plans are. The rest of your life can be the best of your life, but that is absolutely up to you. If you hadn't done so, visit DirtyNobleBook.com. You can sign copies of all my sports titles. Of course, that's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, The Dude, of course, which is, you know, still selling. And some of you got it for Christmas, and thank you so much for sharing that with me. In addition to that, you can come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. You need to schedule in advance. You can get all your questions answered and schedule online, or you can call Dana at 662-268-7601 and come join us over at jeanspage.com. Just a few more days left in the 50% off the annual subscription price special. We've run that. We'll run that basically through the bowl game, and then and that'll be it. But we'll be back with you guys on Monday. I hope you have a great weekend. If you got some new toys, get out there. Be careful. Be careful, right? We need you to be happy and healthy in the new year. Don't overdo it. But I hope that you can make some time this weekend to be with the people you love. And some of you may just kind of took Friday off, you know, and just make it a 5-day weekend or 4.5-day weekend and kind of reconnect. We all need a little downtime. We do. We all need a chance to kind of reset the scales a little bit and kind of understand what really matters in life. But I love each and every one of you, whether you love me back. And I want good things to happen in your life. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.